It certainly is. Thanks for tuning in this morning, and it's Wednesday, so that means we're into our regular weekday morning discussion with Dr. Andrew Corbett. Good morning, Dr. Andrew.
Good morning, Cameron. Great to be with you again.
Indeed. Great to have you back, as we always do every Wednesday. And today we're talking about how to handle regret.
Yeah, dealing successfully with regret, because people will deal with regret.
Mm.
You can't help deal with regret. The issue is how you're going to deal with regret. For some people, regret will be something that almost defines their life. They will hark back to maybe a mistake they've made, maybe something that was done to them, maybe an incident which they were an innocent bystander when it happened, and there will be a sense of regret that they were even there, as strange as that sounds. And for some people, they will not successfully deal with regret.
Mm.
And I guess, Cameron, I hear people sometimes say, I've lived my life, I have no regrets. And whenever I hear that, there is a tinge of sadness that I feel toward them, because the person who lives their life without a sense of regret probably doesn't realise either the pain they may have caused others, which, you know, for normal human empathy, you should feel a sense of sorrow, remorse, and therefore regret for having caused someone else pain. But I think also it sort of betrays a bit of a callousness about them that I just find sad, because I don't think the goal of life is to become harder and colder and more isolated. It's actually the opposite. The goal of human maturity is to become more empathetic, more sympathetic, more connected, warmer. And this is going to be a scary journey for many people, because what we're talking about is vulnerability. And who wants to feel vulnerable? No one.
Nope.
No one's comfortable feeling vulnerable. But it's a two-edged sword in that the more vulnerable you make yourself appropriately to those you can trust, the richer those relationships with those people become. So it's really important that we learn how to handle regret. That now, there are essentially, Cameron, two types of regret that most people, I'll say normal, healthy, functioning people will experience when it comes to regret. The first one is the regret of commission. In other words, these are commission regrets. These are regrets that someone feels because they've done something. Now, I have moments where I'm not exactly overwhelmed with regret, but I do feel the regret that comes from knowing that I have done something that I wish I hadn't done.
Mm.
And my life is not... I'm not going to define my life, but it becomes a part of shaping who I am, how I then deal with that. So things that I've done. So regrets of commission. I've committed something that I wish I hadn't done. And then, of course, there's omission regrets, regrets of things that I wish I had done. And Cameron, I would say that as I ponder, and I sometimes envisage myself on a veranda, on a rocking chair, in my twilight years.
Grumpy. No.
Hopefully not. But there I am on the veranda, on the rocking chair, watching life just, you know, pass by. And there I am just enjoying my twilight years. And I put myself in that moment and I ask the question, complete the following sentence, I wish I had, and just complete the sentence. You know, I wish and then look back to where I am now. So perhaps I could project myself 30, 40, for you, maybe 50 years into the future. And and just look at your life from the perspective of being near the end of your life, looking back to where your life is now and saying to yourself, I wish I had, if only I had, how does that sentence finish? Because I think the regrets of omission are just as painful as the regrets that come from things that we've intentionally done. So for some people, their regrets are extremely painful. In fact, Cameron, a part of my job as a pastor of a church is helping people to navigate through some of the pain of their past, and that's pain either that they've had a hand in or has, you know, they've been an involuntary, unwilling recipient of the pain of someone else, and it causes deep regret. And if not dealt with appropriately, it can actually cripple a person emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, and have a very debilitating physical effect upon a person as well. I could share story after story of people who had quote-unquote mystery illnesses, where their illness was, you know, they went to a doctor and the doctor said, I'm not quite sure what it is, perhaps you're just simply depressed, take this pill, and their ailment just continues to become worse. And all the while, it's not a physical condition. There's a condition of the soul. There's a deep, deep sense of regret that they're not processing well that's causing them to have a physical... It's causing a physical impact on them as well. So, Cameron, I think it's important that we do learn how to process regret successfully. As I said, we'll all process it, but whether we process it successfully or not is another matter. Perhaps after the song, let's talk about why this is important and how we can begin to process regret successfully.
Here on YFM, that's Robbie Williams, of course, with Becoming a Better Man, and going through trials and maybe a few regrets here and there certainly makes us stronger, better people. I always think on life as when you get a trial, you become a stronger, wiser person. We're talking with Dr. Andrew Corbett today on the subject of dealing with regrets. And before the break, we were certainly, Dr. Andrew, you were talking about the fact that, you know, we have that saying that I've had a good life of no regrets. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that that's always a true statement.
Well, I think you're right, Cameron. I think there will be people that will say that, and it's perhaps a little bit of bravado. You know, they're making these statements. It sounds, wow, you know, what a hero. It sounds like this person's really got their act together. This person has really figured out how to process life with its ups and downs. But I guess if we put them in a, you know, behind closed doors and just said, look, be honest with me, is that true? Do you really have no regrets? I think we might get a different answer. And I actually respect people who can say, look, I do have regrets. In fact, I was reading I'm currently in a major project of developing a documentary on the life of the great Tasmanian preacher F.W. Borum, who served in Hobart from 1906 to 1916 and moved from there to Melbourne just after the Second World War, actually during the First World War, and became one of the greatest preachers of all time. He's listed in Banner of Truth Trust's 20 greatest preachers of all time. Warren Wiersbe lists him as one of the 50 greatest Christians that has ever lived. So this is a man of phenomenal influence, sold something in the order of 20 million books, which puts him right up there as one of the high-selling authors of all time, let alone religious authors. An amazing man. But you read his autobiography, and he's at times very poignant and very transparent, where he talks about some of the things that he did in his youthful years as a minister, where he said things to people, he published things about people, And he said at the time he was full of, you know, passion about the matter or whatever the issue was. But then he realised sometime after that the damage he was doing to people, because he was a man of phenomenal intellect. And he said that he intellectually destroyed several people. He destroyed their arguments, he destroyed them, he publicly humiliated them. And at the time it gave him a sense of, I've won, I'm the victor here. I have vanquished my foe. And it was not too long after that he realised what he'd done. And he's writing his autobiography as an older man. He died in 1959, and he wrote his autobiography in the late 1940s, around 1948 or so, so just about 10 years before he died. And he reflects back on those times when he behaved in a way that at the time he said it, you know, it made him look good. It you know, displayed his intellectual prowess. It made him sound good and all the rest of it. But he said the damage that it caused was not something he foresaw or appreciated at the time. And in fact, he gives an episode where he had a public dispute with another pastor, actually in New Zealand. And he wrote for two newspapers, the Tairi, I think it was the Tairi News and the Otago Daily Times.
Okay.
And he had a public platform where he could write virtually a letter to the editor and publicly humiliate his his foe, so to speak. And then he noticed that at the pastors' gatherings, this person avoided him. He noticed that other pastors were afraid to socialise with him because they didn't want to come under, you know, his sting. And he reflected that what he had done was very, very unwise, very, very cold. Then in his biography, he talks how he came to Australia, firstly to Tasmania, then to the mainland. And several years into his ministry, he was called to settle a dispute in New South Wales, actually, where a young pastor had taken his pen and made some very strong comments about another fellow pastor. And he could hearken back to when he was the same age as this pastor. And he shared with this younger pastor his regret. His regret. This is, look, you can do whatever you want. You know, it's your life, it's your ministry, you can do what you want. But you're causing a problem here within your church, which is why, you know, I've been invited to come and see if we can address this. But just let me tell you my story. And he shared the story of what happened in New Zealand. Now, as the story unfolded in New Zealand, he actually wrote and apologised to the man that he had savaged. And they renewed their fellowship, but F.W. Borum says it never picked up where it left off. They once had some marvellous times of camaraderie beside the open fire, staying up, you know, hour on end, into the night, chatting freely and openly. He said even after he had attempted to reconcile with this person, there was a guard up. There was never again that sweetness of fellowship. There was never again that depth of friendship. And F.W. Borum just laments about that because shortly afterwards that man died very suddenly. And he felt like a cad, felt like a heel, that he had taken up what he called, in hindsight, such a petty issue. And he shared this with this New South Welshman who was able to see the wisdom of it. And this is a point that I think we need to make as we address how you successfully deal with regret. Because, Cameron, sometimes we're doing things that we're just not aware of the damage they could cause. We're not aware that one day we might regret what we are doing, the current course of action that we're taking. And so this is one of the ways we can successfully deal with regret. it is to listen to wise counsel. Listen to wise counsel so that when someone comes along and just says, are you sure this is the right course of action? Now, at that point, rather than give a defense and explain to them why you think it is the right course of action, you probably want to detect that they're actually sharing with you something a little bit more than wisdom. They're actually probably sharing with you a regret that they have. And you might want to ask a question, now, why do you think it might not be? And they may share with you, in a similar way to F.W. Borum, their story, where they did something similar, and, you know, that might have been 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. And to this day, it still brings the tinge of pain, the pain of regret. Mm. And they're trying to help you avoid that. So one of the ways we can successfully deal with regret is firstly to avoid it. And that's going to involve learning from others. So our regrets can positively shape us. You know, you can do something and it can be a painful experience because you've made a mistake. And I think just before we go to the news, Cameron, I think of the story of the building of the Titanic, where they, you know, built the unsinkable ship. So they wanted a captain who could sail the unsinkable ship. So what kind of captain did they want? They wanted a captain who had never had a ship sink. So they wanted a captain who could sail the unsinkable ship, and the criteria they had was that this particular captain had never lost a ship. So one of the candidates had actually lost a ship. He had sailed the stretch of waters where the Titanic would sail from England to America, and it's a very, at times, treacherous stretch of water, and he had hit an iceberg and he had lost a ship, and so he was ruled out as a candidate for captain of the Titanic, much to his great disappointment. They appointed a captain, and of course history tells us that, you know, the captain had, as we say in modern vernacular, tickets on himself. And the captain that wasn't successful ended up being the captain of the SS California. On the night which the Titanic had fatefully struck that iceberg, two ships had set out from England to America. One was the California and one was the Titanic. And of course, the captain of the California, who was very wary of sailing through that water, that stretch of water, because he had lost a ship, he gave that iceberg territory a very wide berth. He stayed away because he lost a ship there. He knew the pain and the humiliation. He had deep regrets over what he had done previously. The captain of the Titanic just blithely just drove his ship straight through the icebergs, and of course, it was too late when, you know, they turned port, I think, and scraped the side of the ship, and the rest is history. But the postscript to that history is that the Titanic put out a mayday call. And guess which ship was the first ship there to rescue?
The California.
The California, yeah. That's right. So it's a tremendous irony that the captain they didn't hire because he had lost a ship, and because of the deep regret of that, he had learned how to sail that stretch of water. Mm. And that's the point about regret. You can successfully learn to navigate life by learning from your regrets. So let your regrets have a positive influence on you. So there are times when I look back on my past and I wish I hadn't done that. Mm-hmm. But because I've metaphorically lost a few ships in iceberg territory, and I've suffered the humiliation of it, and I've been accused of being a captain who doesn't know how to sail a boat and all the rest of it, metaphorically, you feel that pain, Cameron. You feel the pain of that of the regret. And you then, if you can learn from that and positively learn from that, you can actually become a better person for it. So it's not just your regrets that can help shape you positively. It's also the regrets of others that can have a positive influence on you as well. So when I read F.W. Borum's My Pilgrimage, and you could probably find a copy of that if you're interested at somewhere like Nicholson's bookstore or something. It's an old book. There were literally hundreds of thousands of these books published. Antiquarian booksellers sell them for about $70, $80. If you pick one up for $10, consider it a bargain. And when I read that, and I read of the regrets that he talks about, I take note because I want to be positively shaped by the regrets of others. Cameron, let's come down the home stretch after the news and discuss three ways that we can positively and successfully deal with regrets.
There we go. We can turn a negative into positivity. That's what the message is from Andrew Corbett this morning as we deal with how to deal with regret in our lives. You see, there's nothing to be ashamed of. It's always a positive thing. And you're listening to Launceston's YFM 105.3 and 98.1, and also streaming off the web at yfm.org.au/streaming. Andrew is back after the news, which is coming up now. It's 9 o'clock. And thanks for your company this morning. It's The Breakfast Show. Cameron Skirving, your host. And of course, being a Wednesday, we've got Dr. Andrew Corbett in the studio today talking about how to deal with regret. And I think a statement that comes to mind is we were talking about the negative of regret being created as a positive. So a sense of increased regret is a sign of increased maturity and healthy sensitivity.
Yeah, I think, Cameron, that, again, it just highlights that there's a strange phenomena that happens in a human being as we mature and go through life. And that phenomena is that rather than become hardened and colder, we actually, if we are committed to becoming fully human, we become softer, sweeter, more open. And because of that, we do end up feeling regret. We do end up feeling pain. We feel the hurt that we cause others. We're more empathetic towards the hurt that others experience. We to become fully human, go through these what might be considered seemingly negative experiences, and yet they are an extremely positive thing. And we would be a poorer society if we didn't celebrate this aspect of humanity. It's for the Christian, this is no surprise. For the Christian, we know that the closer we draw to God, it's not the, you know, we don't feel cleaner and more righteous. The closer we draw to God, the more, you know, if you're coming closer and closer to light, the more aware of those dark corners of your heart you become. And so there's a strange phenomena that happens here that you know, we come to the God who forgives, we come to the God who cleanses, we come to the God who redeems and grants not just a second chance, not just a third chance, but almost an infinite number of chances. And rather than feeling better for it, because we're coming to this God and we're grasping him in a much grander way, we are having the same experience or similar experience to the Apostle Peter in the boat. You remember when Jesus stilled the storm?
Yeah.
Peter looks at him and says, "Depart from me. I'm a sinful man." Now, where did that come from? Well, he got a sense of who Christ really was and his own true condition in light of that. And I think as we become fully human, we don't want to become harder and colder and more isolated and distant. They're things that are going to hamper our maturity. So the more mature you become, the more you're able to process these kind of seemingly negative emotions, such as regret, and we can turn them into something that is positive. One listener has made a valuable comment, and of course listeners can contribute on Facebook
and
Twitter, and some are sending in SMSs to me. So first comment comes from a lady who's just made a point that in this day and age, Facebook and Twitter pose enormous chances to say things that people will regret. And my giddy aunt,
Cameron. Yes, 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 yes.
We as parents who have had, well, we have three of our four children are on Facebook, and when they were under our roof or when in high school, we had to put restrictions on the use of Facebook, and I just cannot fathom parents who don't shepherd their children through their use of Facebook, because honestly, if parents were able to monitor what their children are putting on Facebook, they may well, and I hope they would be mortified. I'd be pretty disturbed if they weren't. But also for the sake of their children, you know, in years to come, many of these children who are putting up pictures of themselves vomiting and wearing outrageous outfits and bragging about crimes they've committed on Facebook are going to turn up for a job interview, and the employer is going to say, "Now, what was your Facebook name again? Crunch it in and have a look at the pictures, have a look at the comments." And they're going, and these young people probably right now have got no idea that, you know, the comments, the pictures they're putting up are going to be objects of deep, deep regret in years to come. And so, look, it's really worth getting children to have some guidelines there.
Once you put some things up, you can't get them down again, basically, with the internet.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
Absolutely. Once it's gone out there, it's gone out there. And look, even celebrities battle this, where they just say something in the heat of the moment on Twitter, and it's out there, gone. It's just out there. Well, in fact, there was that amazing case, was it last week or the week before, from the Australian Rugby Union Federation fined, what was it, $20,000 fine for one of their players who did a Twitter status that reflected poorly on the coach.
Yeah.
Just a Twitter status, for Pete's sake. Yeah. That was a $20,000 Twitter status update right there.
Yep.
And so and at the time, he clearly did not foresee that this was going to cost him $20,000 I think three test matches for the Australian rugby team, the Wallabies. So
that's a regret.
sheesh. He in his press conference was a little lamb. You know, he deeply regretted what he had done, and so he should, by the way, because you do have to think through what you're doing. And what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, so another listener feedback comment that we've got in from another lady who's been listening on her way to work this morning is that she's made the comment that, yes, negative experiences can be turned into positive. The regrets that I've had are becoming a positive part of me. And so thank you for that comment. Appreciate that. And so it's nice to get some on-the-run listener feedback. Here's the first thing. I've got three very simple things that I think will help people to successfully process regret. The first one, if you're doing something you will regret, don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It sounds so, I know I will regret this. Well, don't do it.
If you have doubt, just don't do it.
Well, the statement, look, I know I'm going to regret this, but I'll just, it's like, man, what on earth? There are some people that will excuse their behavior. They will diminish their regret. They will try and transfer the blame of their life and responsibility for their life onto someone else. And I think this is just really immature. I know of husbands and wives where they have a fight, and one of them just storms out and goes down to a bar with the intention of getting drunk and picking up someone just to hurt their spouse. And I just think, good night, fair dinkum. You know, don't do that. Don't do that. because it's not your spouse that you're only going to hurt. Mm. It's there's a whole bunch of people that you're going to hurt as well. And I think we need to recognize the first thing to do is to if you're doing something you know you're going to regret, don't do it. It's I know it sounds simple, but it's not simplistic. It's something that people need to consider.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Secondly, learn from your regrets. Now, this is where you can redeem your regrets. This is where the regrets of your past, when you know you've said something and it's come back and been misunderstood, you can now be shaped as a better, stronger, more trustworthy person if you can learn from your regrets. You know, this is one of those things where regret is a form of pain, and for some people, pain is one of those enigmas of life. You know what? And in fact, just on a side note, some people say, how could there be a good, loving, kind God in the world if there's pain in the world? Because after all, pain serves no purpose. And if God is a purposeful God, then pain doesn't make sense. Therefore, they say there is no God. And I think that that whole equation is totally wrong, because pain does serve a purpose, Cameron. If you put your hand on a hot plate and you feel the twinge of skin sizzling in pain because you've touched something that's hot, that's good. That's good that you don't leave your hand there. It's good that you don't, you know, continue to do it. Thank God that you've got pain
do it again.
Receptors.
Threshold.
Emotionally, we experience pain. And some people, you know, like I would actually argue at times the emotional pain that we feel is worse than physical pain.
Yep.
And it can be emotionally, psychologically crippling. And we need to learn from that, be transformed by that. And, you know, there's that sense where we turn our pain into gain. We turn the pain of the past into gain. And this is there's also a parenting technique here too, because sometimes as parents we don't feel we have the moral authority to say to our children, hey, don't do that, and the child turns around and says, well, you did when you were my age. And we'd feel like check and mate.
Yeah.
You know, now where do you go? Well, I actually think it's not checkmate. It may be check, but it's not checkmate, because the natural I think a really good response to a child who does that to their parent is for the parent who's obviously made a mistake, obviously got some regrets here, and they're now telling the child, don't do it, is to say, it's because I've done it that I want to prevent you from that pain.
Yes.
There is no one more qualified to tell you not to do this than me, because I've done it, I've felt the pain, I don't want you to go through that. So the second thing is we learn from our regrets and we allow them to shape us. So our regrets shape us, and also we learn from the regrets of others. I've given the example of my hero F.W. Borum and how, you know, I'm able to learn from his life, even though it's not my life. I'm able to learn from it, so I can learn from my regrets and the regrets of others. And Cameron, we've got one more. After the song, we're going to come back with, I reckon, probably the big one. We're going to take the elephant out of the cage, and we're just going to unleash the biggest, most redemptive way we can deal with regrets successfully.
Don't hold back, Andrew. Andrew Corbett there never holds back on his encouraging messages. We'll be back with that soon here on Way. But song now from Jeff Moore ties in with the subject this morning. There we go. Land of No Regret there from Jeff Moore. Not With The Distance that time. He released an album simply called Jeff Moore, I think, in 1999, and that's one of the songs off it. Talking about living a life and dealing with regret with Dr. Andrew Corbett this morning, and he mentioned just before we went to that song that he's got the big one for us, so the microphone's all yours.
Dealing
mate.
Successfully with regret, we've got three things. The first one, as we've mentioned, is that if you're doing something that you regret, stop it. As simple as that. It sounds so simple, and I know people are going to say, well, yeah, but that's easy for you to say. Yeah, it is. And I really mean it, and I'm going to connect it to the third one as well that we're about to introduce in a moment. The second one is learn from your regrets and the regrets of others. There are actually people that will benefit from hearing of your regrets. And I think we as a society need to get just a little bit more honest, because we sometimes have this bravado. You know, I've got no regrets. Oh, man, I got bucket loads of regrets. If you want some, I'll give some to you. You know, I got so many. And that doesn't make me less of a person. I think that actually makes me more of a full-orbed human being. And I think as human beings, we will experience the gamut of pain that we either cause or have been caused to us. I mean, Karen, there are some tremendously horrible stories that can be told about people who have had horrible things done to them and yet have learned to turn the regret of that pain into something that has made them a really sweet, better, helpful, productive person. At Lugano, we recently produced a DVD called Bouncing Back. It tells the story of seven people, four of them are Tasmanians, and we have people from the mainland and also from the United States who many of whom had horrible things done to them, and some of whom had done horrible things. And in this Bouncing Back DVD series, we show that from what I'm about to introduce, the number three one, is that they've been able to, as we say, bounce back, redeem their life. So second one, learn from your regrets and the regrets of others. And I think if we as a society learn to share our regrets a little bit more honestly, a little bit more openly, we're actually going to help each other. We're going to help each other avoid pain. And that means that we're going to have a greater chance of reaching our potential as human beings. So here's the third one. I know we don't have a pre-recorded drum roll ready to go, but here's the third one. It's already on Facebook, so people can see it there on my Facebook account. But here it is. Number three, look to God, who redeems, and trust Him to take your pain and bring good out of it. Now, there are going to be some people that go, that's it. I'm going, no, that's it. I mean, it's not that's it. That's it. And this is where I would invite people. Perhaps you may not even know God. You may not even know if there is a God. Well, I just simply invite you to find out. Pray a prayer that says something like this: God, if you're real, reveal yourself to me. God, I need your help right now. Have your way in my life. Now, you know, if we treat God like a genie in the bottle or kind of like a celestial Santa Claus, we totally have the wrong picture. And I think that's completely the wrong way to approach God. But when it comes to the deepest pain, the deepest regret that a human soul can experience, it is simply not possible for a psychologist, a counselor, a pharmacist, a psychiatrist, a therapist, a hypnotist, an entertainer, another person to help you solve that pain. You need help beyond yourself. You need help beyond mere natural means. And God is the only one. He's the only one qualified. And so the third thing is to look to the God who redeems. The Bible's full of these sorts of stories that tell us of horrendous pain that inflicted on someone. I think of Joseph, who in Genesis 50 has his brothers come to him, and kind of after their dad's died, they're fearful that Joseph is now going to retaliate for the evil they committed against him. Many people have seen Andrew Lloyd Webber's Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. The whole story is based on a Bible account where this man Joseph says to his brothers, I'm not going to retaliate because the evil you intended, God used for good. And this is the marvelous message of the Bible, that bad things can happen, but if you would turn to God and you'll trust God, you'll look to God, you'll trust Him, He can make good come from that. He can make good come from that. And Cameron, we could be here literally all day interviewing people who could share their stories. And these are nearly always untold stories. And that's why the Bouncing Back DVD series is just an opportunity for people to begin to hear these stories. And so these people will tell you, point number three, I really didn't even need point one and two. They're kind of subsidiary to point three.
Yeah.
Point three, I looked to the God who can redeem pain, who can redeem my mistakes, who can redeem the pain that was caused to me. Cameron, I've dealt with women who were abused in primary school, sexually abused for over 10 years. And one lady I spoke with literally has no memory before the age of 11. She cannot, literally cannot remember her life before the age of 11 because the pain is so intense. So I think we need to recognise that, you know, the story goes here in this for this lady, that it was later in her life that she turned to God and asked him to help her to deal with the horrendous pain. This is a woman that ended up in her late 20s, crawled up in a fetal position in the shower with the shower running all day because she couldn't face life, and she was physically trying to wash the guilt and the shame and the pain away from the shower. As weird as that sounds, Cameron. And she went through psychologists, psychiatrists, she went through GPs. No one helped until she turned to God. And she was able to find that healing, that release. And she now is a better, stronger, sweeter person as a result. That's just one of them. That's just one. And for many people, I know that they would probably say, well, that's all right. That's a great theory, Andrew, but you don't know what I've been through, or you don't know what I've done. And you're right, I don't, but I do know this. I know this well enough because of my own life and the multiple stories of others, that there is enough people who have applied 1, 2, and 3, particularly 3, they've turned to God and he's redeemed their pain. The pain, the sting, the ache of regret is turned into a point of strength, not a point of crippling. Cameron, there we have it. That's how we can successfully deal with regret. Now, next week, I won't be here.
No.
I will be walkabout. I'll be on an 80K hike.
Oh, we'll just go satellite then.
Yeah. But we'll pick it up the following week, Cameron.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you. And just before I go, I want to thank our listeners and supporters for their wonderful support. We're now coming into the toughest time of year for YFM. Over December, January, it is the toughest time of year for us financially. We are utterly dependent on listener support. We are very thankful for our sponsors, and our sponsors are telling us that they're getting tremendous value because our listeners, you, the listener, are supporting our sponsors because our sponsors support YFM. So thank you very much
thank
for that.
Thank you very much.
It's vital. And thank you to Marcus, who's promoting our sponsorship as well. Doing a great job. But we are utterly dependent on people who believe in what we're doing. And if you are benefiting from YFM and you believe in what we're doing and you can see the benefit of what YFM is doing, we could really use your help now, and it would just be so appreciated. So, Cameron, I just want to thank you and the team and our listeners, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Indeed. Have a good time on Walkabout. There we are. Dr. Andrew Corbett joining us this morning once again, talking about dealing with regret. And, very positive this morning. I hope you enjoyed it. And we will be uploading the message this morning, and so you can download it off our website soon. So if you'd like to take that with you, then you can download it from the web. Just go to yfm.org.au.